Okay. Black holes, accreting black holes, are surrounded by stars. And you might wonder what would be the consequences of interactions between stars and the accretion disk. We heard some mention yesterday about the possibility of stars actually plunging through the accretion disk and getting their orbits getting ground down into the plane of the accretion disk. I would like to make the point today that, in fact, if you are at all worried about this, you should first be worried by a process that is orders of magnitude more stronger, faster, and that has to do with not with hydrodynamical star disk interactions, but with purely gravitational ones. And I'm arguing here briefly that this process, the gravitational torquing of the disk by the orbit averaged stellar trajectories, would be typically at least 100 times more strong than what you would get by the stars actually crashing through the disk. I won't go through the steps, but you're welcome to look it up in the paper, Bregman and Alexander from 2012. It's a paper with my ex-student, Michal Bregman. And basically, once you scale the two different processes, you find that the typical ratio between the amount of angular momentum that you endow the disk when you ram through it, as opposed to what you get by simply torquing it, is only 2%, and it scales inversely with the mass of the black hole. So when we go to 10 to the 8 solar mass black holes, it's completely negligible. And only when we go down to roughly the seed size black hole do we have to start worrying about the actual hydrodynamical interactions. You can also compare the gravitational interaction with the internal viscous torques, and it turns out that the scaling is different if you're talking about the viscosity that is responsible for making mass flow into the black hole, or the viscosity that is responsible for unwarping any kind of warps in the disk. But in either way, it can easily be of order unity, or at least non-negligible, which means that the stars will play a fundamental role in the behavior of the disk. You cannot ignore it. So the outline of my very brief talk on this subject would be, first of all, to discuss what actually these stellar torques do to the disk. And I'll give one slide of introduction about the physics of a warp accretion disk, and one slide introduction about what is resonant relaxation, which is the dynamical name for this process. And then I'll discuss, just list the results that we obtained for a proof of concept study where we took the most spectacularly observed disk ever, the maser disks of NGC 4258, where we basically know everything about, and applied this idea to and got different types of responses, which were all of very high interest for understanding accretion in general, but may actually also have important implications for the evolution of massive black holes, in particular because, as I just argued, these torques become much more stronger when you're talking about low mass black holes in the process of building up. This is work in progress. What we have is mostly open questions with some ideas about solutions, and I'll very briefly describe the current status of this research, but I don't have many final answers yet. So one slide, the summary of accretion. So accretion is driven by gradients. In the horizontal plane, you have a gradient in the Keplerian velocities, two streams of gas then have a relative velocity and therefore friction, and this drives the mass inflow inside. When the disk is warped by some agent, you have a vertical temperature and pressure gradient, which ensures that you have pressure differences acting to unwarp the disk. In the context of the standard alpha disk model, which we all know is a very simplified one, but a very useful paradigm to study these things. If you assume that the viscosities are isotropic, and we'll hear later on in this conference that they're probably not, but if you assume you can get a connection between the alpha parameter that is responsible for the inflow, that's alpha 1, and the alpha parameter that is responsible for the unwarping, alpha 2, and they are, since alpha is confined to be less than 1, the alpha 2 is larger than alpha 1, or in words, this means that disks tend to unwarp faster than they flow in. So that's the main result that you need to remember from this. The other bit of physics that I want to introduce is resonant relaxation. It's an extremely complicated and actually not quite understood subject to this day, but very briefly, the idea is that if you have a potential with a high degree of symmetry, such as the potential around a black hole, which for our purpose is just a point mass, we will not discuss at this level GR effects, then the orbits are frozen because of the symmetry, and therefore a test particle would see the same background and will be torqued in a coherent way. Over time, the changes in the angular momentum will grow linearly with time and not like a square root of time, which is what you expect from a random process. However, the symmetry is not perfect. For example, around the black hole, you have stars. The stars, then the distributed mass would introduce precession to the orbits. GR would introduce GR precession. And therefore, the symmetry will, after a time, die out or be quenched. But nevertheless, over that time, you would accumulate a huge change in angular momentum, which will relax your test star's orbit at a much, much faster pace than you would get by normal two-body incoherent relaxation. This sounds like a very subtle and rare thing, but in fact, once you know what to look for, it's very easy to reproduce in numeric simulations. I'm just giving here examples from work done in my group, but it's not that we have an exclusive rights to this. This is a very clear example of linear growth of the angular momentum. You can find maybe hints of this process operating in the galactic center. It explains some systematic differences in different types of stellar populations there. And what I will concentrate here is what it can do to accretion disks. So this famous accretion disk needs no introduction. I'll just mention that we know essentially almost everything about this disk, the mass of the black hole, the distance to the system, the size of the disk. And what's more important or more relevant here is that this disk is observed to be warped with a warp angle of something like 8 degrees. And if you plug in the rough estimates I gave in the first slide, you will see that, first of all, this disk is completely dominated. If it interacts with stars, then it's completely dominated by these RR torques. And in fact, the contribution of these gravitational torques to the, when they fight against the, either the perpendicular viscosity or the parallel viscosity, the in-plane and out-of-plane, is of order unity. So we expect this disk to be fundamentally altered by the assumed existence of stars around the black hole. We don't see them. And this, if you actually solve the differential equations that govern the behavior of gas in the presence of internal torques and the external torques, you find these are snapshots from the simulations. This is the actual disk. This is the cut. The blue part is the region where the maser is emitted from. And for that part, at least, of the disk, we actually know also not only the dynamics, but also the gas properties. And here, this flattening here is the effect of the Bardeen-Peterson effect. Process due to the frame dragging fighting against the disk's viscosity. So one can show nice movies here, but I don't have time to do that, so just show you these two snapshots. So you can see that the disk is warped by the process. And when you do this quantitatively, you can see these are different models. Every color represents a different realization and under different assumptions about the and whether the black hole is spinning or not, and what is the initial misorientation between the black hole and the incoming gas. And you can see that the warp angle varies very dramatically, and in a large fraction of the time lies above the 8-degree mark, which is what we actually observe. This is about 20% of the time. So seeing NGC 4258 with an 8-degree warp is not a rare event and completely consistent with this idea. The warping of the disk also, of course, increases its own covering fraction relative to the inner continuum source. And here again, for these models, is the covering factor. Notice that it is of order unity at all time. It varies a lot, but this means then that the disk has ample opportunity to intercept the ionizing continuum, which is something that we know is necessary to actually explain the emission spectrum and the thermal properties of disks. The internal viscosity itself is not enough. Furthermore, the fact that the disk is warping and unwarping actually induces enhanced mass loss. This is the mass loss curves, and they sometimes shoot up to four times what you would expect in a steady state. And this simply shows you, without any fancy correlation analysis, that the spikes in the mass accretion rate coincide with the maximal warping. Now, this has also consequences. If your disk, for some reason, was sub-Eddington, this can push it up towards the Eddington limit. Since the growth is exponential, this can actually accelerate growth by over a factor, say, of 100 over the disk's lifetime. If the disk is already at the Eddington limit, which is not something that is difficult for disks to do, given the fact that there's a lot of gas around, then trying to pump too much mass into the disk would stall, and this could set off a gravitational fragmentation and star formation. Either way, it has important implications. And finally, the Bardeen-Peterson torques actually cause the couple the fluctuations in the potential of the stars via the disk to the spin of the black hole, causing the spin to jitter. And let me just show you this nice short movie. So what you see here is basically just the image of the spins at the spin axis of the black hole and the total angular momentum of the disk as projected on the XY plane. And you can see that they're playing catch. The potential fluctuations cause the disk to warp and wobble, and the spin of the black hole is trying to catch up through the Bardeen-Peterson effect. And at the end of the day, it jitters on a scale of a few degrees, which means that if this is the spin is has a one-to-one mapping with the direction of a radio jet, then this means that the radio jet would also jitter. And in fact, on a scale of about an opening angle of 5 degrees or so, which is actually consistent with the best, the thinnest and most well-defined of jets that we see. And my final slide is to tell a little bit about the future of this study. So these resonant relaxation torques are part of a bigger and very complicated issue of how stellar systems randomize. We have a Hamiltonian system that everything is deterministic, and nevertheless, at some level, it becomes random. Chaos in stellar systems doesn't quite operate in the naive way you would think. And there are many open problems in this on this field. And what we are trying now to do with a student, Ben Baror, is to obtain a full 3D statistical description of resonant relaxation. It's an extremely thorny and complicated technical problem. In fact, you have to do spherical harmonics in four dimensions. And there are several different limits to consider, the coherent diffusive limits. You want to calculate the amplitudes of the torques and their correlation length and correlation time scales. And here I plot initial results which show how such a disk would be puffed up on average by the fluctuating torques. This is for this light disk of NGC 4258, and the different curves correspond to different correlation lengths that you assume. For a more massive compact disk, it puffs up less. And the question is then, would you reach a point where the disk would actually be disrupted? And this depends on the different parameters of the disk, obviously. We already can derive a power law scaling for the response of the disk. It is also shows us that the disks respond more when they are less massive. And therefore, one could actually reach a point where there will be a tension or maybe even a disagreement between recently born black holes and the stars in their birth galaxy. Maybe the stars will not allow such low mass black holes to actually grow by accretion. So this type of processes may shed light on the question of what came first. Is it the stars or the black hole? So I'll just flash my summary and stop here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for Tom?
So this is a question to both you and Massimo somehow. So we heard a talk on torques exerted by gas and now about from stars. So in a normal system where you have both, who would be the winner? So would be gas or stars that dominate the process of warping and alignment, and under which conditions this happens? So
here the disk does actually define the up to a few degrees the plane by which angular momentum is being transferred to the black hole. This is why I call this effect jitter. It won't flip the spin altogether. It's a kind of a few degrees.
Yeah, but so if on top of this effect you also have what Massimo just described, I have trouble seeing the
disk coexistence. The overall disk orientation. It's here in this image as well. There is a preferred axis, which is given by the direction from which the source material is being transferred, and this sets the average plane about which the spin fluctuates. So it's still true that the overall evolution will be decided by whether or not it's continuous accretion, but from a coherent disk or a random accretion from many different mini accretion episodes.
So I think we have time for one final question.
Actually, a quick pair of questions. To get your specific rates, what sort of dense stellar cluster did you assume? How many stars coming in? How close?
I assumed that within the radius of influence of the black hole, calibrated by observed M sigma relation, there is twice the mass of the black hole in stars. And I assumed a plain vanilla 1.5 or 1.75 cusp structure the way in.
The sort of pair to this is that presumably the torque exerted in the Spartine-Petterson case will differ depending on whether the paracenter of the star is inside the warp transition radius or outside.
Sorry, again.
The way in which the star will interact with the disk will differ depending on whether its paracenter is inside the warp transition radius for Petterson or outside.
So no, when you do the formal analysis, you actually write down the spherical harmonic expansion of the torques, and you do the formal analysis, you find that up to linear terms in the disk equation, the RMS of the fluctuation is always about whatever is the steady state, regardless of whether it is warped by a Bardeen-Petterson warp
that's
or
right.
not.
But the way it's but the interaction with the spin will be different.
The star doesn't interact directly in our picture with the spin of the black
that's
hole,
right.
only with the disk.
That's right. But how the disk interacts with the spin is different depending whether you're inside or outside. And so that's where the change comes.
I think that the problem is separable in the following sense, if I understand what you're asking. I can tell you how much you should, on average, change the orientation of the disk at any given radius, and that amount does not depend on the actual shape of the disk. Now, you can then plug that into the Bardeen-Petterson torque formula and find out what that does to the black hole. Now, obviously, since there is a cross product there, it makes a difference whether you're perturbing it from a nearly aligned equatorial position or it's already tilted. But that does not bear on the question of how much the disk is fluctuating due to the torques of the stars. Did I answer that?
Yeah, I think maybe I'll explain myself better in person.
Okay.
Yeah, I think probably we can continue this offline. You can explain further. Anyway, at this point, we should thank all the speakers in the afternoon session. I've been told that there is a very nice reception waiting for us outside in the 14th. And so I invite everyone to go to the reception and please take a look at the wonderful posters as well. Thank you.